In chapter 3, I want to discuss computer arithmetic. I will do that because computer arithmetic can behave quite differently from what we would call exact arithmetic. And so there can be, under certain circumstances, kind of surprising, even wrong results. And for that reason, I want to discuss this topic. So like in mathematics, you have also on a computer different types of numbers. And on a computer, you have the so-called integers, which correspond more or less to the integers that you know from mathematics. And then in addition, you have the so-called floating point numbers, which represent then both rational and irrational numbers. So you have, of course, on a computer always a finite number of bytes or bits to represent your number. And therefore, it's clear that you cannot actually represent most numbers exactly. I mean, even a simple fraction like a third, for instance, cannot be represented exactly on with a binary representation. Yeah. So in computer science, of course, you have the units of bits or bytes, right? 8 bits are 1 byte. And so let's start with the integers. And by default, unless in your program you request something different, integers are stored in Fortran as 32-bit words. That means 4 bytes. So for an integer, you might think that the most obvious thing to do would be to use perhaps 1 bit for the sign, and then the other bits kind of for the other decimal places in a basis 2 representation. But actually, that's not what's done. Instead, integers are represented by something which is called signed integers via 2's complements. Okay, what's happening there? I mean, first, if you have an integer that's not too large, that's in the range between 0 and actually 2 to the power 31 minus 1, it is stored essentially as you would expect, right, in a basis 2. But then, instead of having negative numbers, what you would expect to be numbers that are larger than this 2 to the power 31, they actually correspond to negative numbers. So if you have a negative integer minus L, where L is in between 1 and 2 to the power 31, it's stored as a binary representation of the positive integer of 2 to the power 32 minus this L. So let's look at a few examples. Of course, the most important integer in a certain sense, 0, of course, is represented in a 0. That's the last formula here on page 27. And you see, I mean, I have written here all the 32 bits that are used in a representation on a computer. Yeah, then if we go to the next page, page 28, then of course it's also obvious. The 1 is just 000 and then a 1. Then the 2 is 10, 3 is 11, 4 is 100, and so on. Right? I mean, it's a usual thing how you represent numbers in a basis 2. And so I go up here up to 71, for instance, and then also I show you the representation of minus 71 according to the rule that was on the previous page. And yeah, we will use those two numbers now then actually to motivate why actually this kind of strange representation via 2 complements is chosen for integers. Also, if I give you just still in the last two lines, I give you the largest positive integer that can be represented 2 to the power 31 minus 1, and then the smallest one, which is minus 2 to the power 31. Okay, now let's go back to this plus and minus 71. And actually here at the bottom of page 28, I have again written down those two numbers, and now I add them, right? So I add 71 plus minus 71, and the result, of course, should be 0. And yeah, that's actually the case. I mean, if you add up everything, I mean, if you add up here the last bit of 71 and minus 71, right? That's always, that's 1 1, so 1 plus 1 in base is 2 is 1 0, and then we see we get a 1, and then always this, okay, it's always carried on, and you see in the rest always if I have a 0 and at the top there's a 1 at the bottom and vice versa, so that means this 1 has to be carried through and it has to be added, then that's in the last line now in this formula, it has to be added as bit number 33. But of course we know only 32 bits are used to represent integers, and so this bit this additional bit which would be required is just neglected. It's essentially what's an overflow, it's neglected, and then indeed you see you get zero. And actually just this property, right, that's a motivation for using this representation of integers. But you can imagine that can cause problems, right? I mean, if you, for instance, if you have an integer that's larger than this largest possible integer that can be represented, which was, right, 2 to the power 31 minus 1, if you add, for instance, to this number still some integer, right, then you get in a forbidden region. But, well, you have the 32 bits, and that means you end up then just with a positive number, which in principle would be larger than this number, but we know by convention that's actually then a negative number. So all of a sudden, by adding something to a positive number, you can get then finally something negative if you print out this number. Concerning the computer arithmetic, there are the so-called IEEE rules. IEEE is an abbreviation for Institute of Electric and Electronic Engineers. So that's an important organization in the United States, which is setting all the standards for computing. And actually, according to those recommendations by IEEE, the computer will not print an error message if such an overflow occurs. So if you, with your integers, if you get outside the allowed interval, it will not give you any warning, unless you compile your program with certain flags, which will then actually print a warning or even stop the program in such a case. So what is important actually is that as a programmer, you kind of anticipate already such problems, and you just write your program in such a way that actually such a problem will never occur. There's another problem with integers, and that's if you do certain arithmetic operations, if you do an addition or multiplication, then of course the result is again an representable integer, unless you are outside the allowed interval, but so in general that will be the case. It's more difficult if you do, for instance, a division. I mean, in a division, the result might be an integer, but it might also be a floating point operation. And actually, if you do operations within integers, we will look at such an example in a moment, then the compiler is assuming that your result will also be an integer. And so if the result is not an integer, then the computer will do what's called rounding toward zero. So it will round your number and will again then assign an integer value to the result, which again might not be what you want to have in a code perhaps. So I think that was what I wanted to say about integers. Let's just now still look, you will of course also learn it in the Fortran tutorial, let's look at how to declare integers in Fortran. I mean, in any programming language, it is important actually that you declare the type of your variables, whether that's integers or floating point numbers. And so on page 30, I mean, you see there an example. So I declare here the variables i1, i2, i3, and k. I declare them as integers, as 4-byte integers. That means 32-bit integers. So that's what we just have considered all the time. Then, of course, you cannot have only scalar variables of this 4-byte integer type, but you can also have arrays. For instance, here I have an integer array IA, which has 4 elements, for instance, or a second array, which has IB, which has also 4 elements. Yeah, and then, of course, you see some simple operations. I mean, if you subtract 2 from 8, of course, the result is an integer. 3 times 5 is an integer. 3 to the power 3. All those operations are perfectly okay. Also, if you divide 8 by 2, it's fine, right? The result is exactly 4. It's an integer. If you divide 12 by 3, again, you have an integer, exactly 4. Yeah, also a useful function frequently is a modulo function for integers. But now in this little loop that I have added here at the end, now there things become a little bit tricky. Okay, so I have here this loop where k goes from 1 to 4, and then I say the array IA of k is 2 divided by k, and IB of k is minus 2 divided by k. So now, what happens? If k is equal to 1, of course, it's fine. In both cases, the result is again an integer. If k is 2, it's also fine. But if k is now 3, then actually there is a problem, right? Then we have 2/3 or minus 2/3, which is not an integer. And so now the computer is doing what I explained to you already before. It says, well, I have here an operation where both input numbers are integers, so I assume that the result again will be an integer. Okay, but now 2/3 is not an integer, so now, yeah, the computer will do this rounding towards zero, so it will print out zero as a result. Same thing actually for the minus 2 over k. Also, if you do this rounding towards zero, you will also get zero in this case. Of course, with 4, it's the same problem, right? You get there plus minus 1/2, which is also not an integer. So you can write just a little program and run it and see really what's happening in practice. Let's next discuss floating point numbers. I mean, floating point numbers are, of course, typically kind of the most important data type in scientific computing, because most quantities that you want to specify correspond to rational numbers, not integers. I mean, you might want to describe a quantity such as an energy, a speed, a position, right? All of those quantities, of course, in a computer program, they will be represented by floating point numbers. So integers are actually in many codes only used for indexing arrays, or of course in some codes also you can have really floating you can have operations with integers where kind of the result gives some kind of physical quantity. Yeah, so how are now floating point numbers represented? As a representation is very similar to kind of the scientific notation that you know, right? Where you write a number x as first a plus or minus sign, and then you have this s, which is called a significant, and then you have in typically basis 10, that means you multiply that with 10 to some exponent, right? That's a scientific notation, and that's essentially also what a computer is using to represent floating point numbers, with the exception that it's not using base 10 but using base 2, right? So that's then in equation 3, where again x you have plus minus significant times 2 to the power e. Yeah, in this case, of course, the significant has to be in the interval between 1 and 2. Yeah, and then we have again a finite number of bits to represent the significant, and those bits, I numerate them now in equation 4. I go from B0 up to BP minus 1, and so B0 is significant before the comma, and everything afterwards is after. And typically, actually, you are considering so-called normalized numbers, which means that by convention, this B0 is 1, so then, of course, you don't have to store it. Yeah, let's look again at an example, like for instance the number 5.5, right? That's, of course, that's nothing but 11 halves. And then, okay, 11 is of course easy to represent in a binary representation, right? 11 is 8 plus 2 plus 1. So that means we have 8, 1 times 8 plus 0 times 4 plus 1 times 2 plus 1 times 1. So we have 1, 0, 1, 1. Okay, and then, okay, we have to divide by 2. That means we have to move the decimal place to after the first one. And so you see, yes, in equation 5 you see then the result of this binary representation of this number. Okay, now again we have to decide, of course, how many bits we will use for the different quantities that we have here. Of course, we will use certainly one bit for the plus or minus sign, but then we have to decide how many bits, for instance, we use for the significant. And now there's again such an IEEE standard, which says that in the so-called double precision arithmetic, you should use, computer manufacturers are supposed to provide 52 bits for the significant and then 11 bits for the exponent. Okay, so the total storage requirement is such 64 bits, which of course equals 8 bytes. So now out of the 11 bits for the exponent, of course, we can have a positive or negative exponent. So one bit is lost for the sign. And that means the largest exponent is such 2 to the power 10, which is a minus 1, which is about 1,000. And therefore, the largest normalized floating point number is therefore of the order of 2 to the power 1,000, which is something like of the order of 10 to the power 300. Yeah, for the smallest floating point numbers, it's quite similar. So the smallest exponent is also more or less minus 1,000. Actually, it's slightly different for technical reasons. And so that means the smallest number is 2 to the power minus 1,000, which is about 10 to the power minus 300. So that's something one should keep in mind, only orders of magnitude, right? So the largest number in this so-called double precision arithmetic is about 10 to the power 300, and the smallest number is 10 to the power minus 300. Okay, now of course, if a result of a floating point operation is outside of this interval, then again, we have a so-called floating point exception. And the question is now, what kind of, in a computer code, for instance, if you do such an operation, what should be printed out as a result? And there actually the IEEE standard says that, I mean, if you have out numbers, you have a number that's larger than this possible largest number, then the computer should print plus or minus infinity as a result. Actually, that's not what's happening on most computers. So actually, the most vendors are not following in this respect the IEEE recommendations. And you can try out on your computer actually what's happening when you on purpose, if you construct a number that's larger than the largest possible floating point number. Okay, overflows are of course one possibility to do kind of things that are not allowed. Of course, there are also other operations that also in mathematics are not allowed. For instance, if you divide by zero or if you take the square root of a negative number. And in this case, actually also IEEE recommends what should be then printed out at the result. And there actually it should be not a number which is abbreviated NaN, right? That makes sense because, yeah, just the square root of a negative number is it's could be an imaginary number, but if you don't allow for imaginary numbers, then it doesn't exist, and so it says not a number. On page 33, let's look again on how to declare now floating point numbers in Fortran. So you see here on page 33, there's just again a very simple little program. Again, we have an integer I that we have already discussed. And now you see here I have real in parentheses 8. That means I have 8 byte integers, variables x and y. Okay. Yeah, then let's look here. That's now an important difference. Here x, I write x equals 1 divided by 5. And then I write y equals 1.0 divided by 5.0. So what's the difference here? I mean, if I write x equals 1 divided by 5, then the computer will assume that, of course, well, if you write it in this way, right, that means for the computer, 1 and 5 are integers. And then the computer will assume that if both your input numbers for this operation are integers, that also the result will again be an integer. And that means it will do what we have discussed already before. It will do this rounding towards 0. Okay. Yeah, so it will say the result is 0. And then, okay, then it has a result which is an integer. And then, of course, it will write this integer now in a floating point number. So in this case, it will convert the integer into a floating point number. But nevertheless, if the integer is 0, then also the resulting floating point number will be 0. So that's perhaps something which is a little bit surprising. And actually there, my experience is that every year kind of students make easily errors because of such effects. So you have to be very careful about that. So how can you avoid it? I mean, you have, if you want to write this variable 1/5 into a real number, then you have to write it here in this way. You have to write it 1.0. So that means 1.0 means, well, the value of course of this number is 1, and the D stands for double precision. So it's the number 1 in this kind of double precision representation that we have discussed. And the same thing for the 5.0. So in this case now, we have for the operation, we have two numbers which are of type double precision, and therefore the computer or the compiler will assume that the result again is of the type double precision, and then it will assign the final result to y, and of course that's the correct result. That's typically what you want to do. Okay, so you see, you just, I mean, you have to make it really very clear to the computer that you do a calculation where you use double precision numbers, and therefore where the result can also be a double precision number. Yeah, okay, then of course here that's what we discussed already. You can try out what's happening if you do an operation that's not allowed, dividing by 0, square root of a negative number. And then of course you can also try out what's happening if overflow occurs for a floating point number, right? So you start already with a floating point number that's close to the largest allowed number, right? You put it, for instance, 2 to the power 1020, and then you continue multiplying by it by 2 in every step, so it's getting larger and larger, and therefore, right, overflow should soon occur. In the same way, you can start with a very small number, 2 to the power minus 1060, and then you continue dividing by 2, and then of course at some point you should get underflow. You cannot represent the number anymore by a non-zero number, and you will also see what's happening then in this case. Yeah, so after this introduction now into the representation of integers and floating point numbers, let's look at a very important topic, which is rounding. As we said, if you do an integer operation, then in most cases the result will be, I mean, if it's a meaningful operation, will be again an integer. If you do a floating point operations with a certain number of bytes, then actually in most cases the result will have more bytes than your two input values. And well, we know we have only a kind of those 64 bits available for our floating point numbers, which means that if an intermediate result actually would require more than those 64 bits, they have to kind of to be taken away. That means some rounding has to occur. And so actually that means that after every single floating point operation, in general, a rounding will be necessary afterwards. So you cannot do just a floating point operation by itself. Necessarily, it's always followed by a rounding operation. So what are the consequences of that? Well, first of all, the rounding that's done after a floating point operation is essentially also the rounding that you typically do in school. And there is actually a quantity which kind of can measure the relative accuracy of floating point numbers, or let's say of a system of floating point numbers. And this quantity is called ULP, which stands for unit in the last place. And actually, typically, you are interested in this quantity only for the floating point number one. And this ULP of one has then actually a special name. It's called the machine epsilon. So this machine epsilon gives us essentially the relative accuracy of our floating point numbers. Right before, we have seen what are the largest and the smallest values, and we have seen that something like 10 to the minus 300 and 10 to the plus 300. But that's certainly not the relative accuracy, right? You don't have kind of 300 decimal places of accuracy. Yeah, so to understand kind of rounding and its effects in a floating point system, let's look at some kind of toy floating point system. And there I assume that we have a significant that has only 3 bits, and the exponent can take on only 3 different values, namely minus 1, 0, and 1. We will then again assume that we have normalized numbers, and then we get this equation 6, right? We have that's kind of this floating point system that we have available. So we have two possibilities for b1 and b2, and then, as we said, 3 possibilities for the exponent. So that means this floating point system, right, has just 2 times 2 times 3. That means 12 numbers. So on the next page, actually, those numbers are shown. Different colors kind of refer to different exponents. So red is exponent equals 1. So for the exponent equals 1, I have the floating point numbers 2, 2.5, 3, and 3.5. Well, for e equals 0, I have 1, 1.25, 1.5, 1.75, and so on. And then at the bottom of page 35, right, those numbers are visualized. So what you see is that, right, the distance between different floating point numbers, right, is proportional to the distance from the origin, which makes sense because that just means that essentially the relative accuracy will always be the same. Of course, the absolute accuracy will not be the same. I mean, if you have a very large number, then of course you are not interested in many decimal places. It's more or less a relative accuracy that's typically of importance. Yeah, so from that figure also we can read off this ULP. If you go to the floating point number 1, then we see that the distance to the next larger floating point number is a quarter, and the distance to the next smaller floating point number is 1/8, right? So you can show then in general that if you have now not just this toy system, but let's say you use p different bits for your significant, then you can show what is here given in equation 7, namely we can show that this relative accuracy, right, which is given by this ULP of x divided by x, that's in the interval between 1 half to the power p and 1 half to the power p minus 1. Yeah, if we put in the values there, if you remember, p was 53 according to IEEE standards, then you will find that the relative accuracy, that's now equation 8, is of the order of 10 to the power minus 16. So that means you have not quite, but you have nearly 16 decimal places of accuracy in those double precision numbers. So that's a, right, that's a relative kind of accuracy. Yeah, so if you want to represent now a single number, I mean, then necessarily you have, I mean, unless it can be represented exactly, which is kind of quite unlikely, you will have always this kind of error. Now, of course, in a scientific calculation, your computer will do billions, perhaps, of floating point operations. And then, of course, after, as we said, after each floating point operation, this rounding is done. So that means kind of rounding errors will accumulate. And of course, you will get actually an accuracy that's less than those 16 decimal places. But if your code is well behaved, actually this kind of loosening of accuracy is kind of fairly slow. And you can nevertheless frequently have results where perhaps some 11 or even 13 decimal places are correct. Of course, it means also that if you print out a result, right, it certainly doesn't make sense to print it out with more than 16 decimal places, because those last decimal places essentially will be noise, they will be determined by surrounding. And actually also, as we will see, kind of the result can, I mean, those last decimal places can depend, for instance, on how you compile it, how the computer will internally perform operations, in which order it will perform it. So those last decimal places are typically irrelevant. Yeah, so you shouldn't therefore print out too many decimal places. It doesn't make sense. There is actually only one exception. And in some cases, perhaps you want to restart a program exactly from the values where you stopped somewhere, right? So you want that this kind of continuation run will produce exactly the same results that you would have obtained if you just had continued your first run for a longer time. And so that means in such a case, you have to write really into a file the exact representation in bytes. So you can do that. There's typically in most programming language, you can use what's called an unformatted file where you can write in all the bytes. But in most cases, probably you want kind of to look at the files, and then you have to use a formatted file where then, of course, your numbers are written in a basis 10. Okay, now the question is, if you write your numbers in basis 10 and then in the restart you read them in, and then of course after reading in they will be transferred or converted back, of course, to base 2. So how many decimal places now have you to write into this file to get back exactly the same representation in base 2? Yeah, there, I mean, the problem is the following. I mean, if you are, that's kind of the little figure at the bottom of page 37, there you see I have here at the top this line are the numbers kind of in this base 2. And you see here that in this case, if my base 10 floating point system looks like that, then you see that two base 2 numbers will be mapped on the same base 10 number. And then, of course, that means if you then convert back to base 2, right, then those two numbers actually will be mapped then to the second number in this base 2 representation, right, because that's the closest one. Okay, so that means in this case If you this I mean along this arrow here, right, the third floating point number would be kind of converted to the second floating point number in this system if you write intermediate results in a file and then you read them in again. So it turns out, I mean, this mapping of two floating point numbers onto the same number in base 10 cannot happen if at any point your base 10 floating point system is at least two times denser than the base 2 floating point system. So that then will give rise to the requirement of equation 9. And then if you put in now the numbers for the IEEE double precision numbers, then you find that the Q, which is the number of decimal places in the decimal representation, has to be 17. Okay, yeah, so that means that's the only exception. Usually, I mean, it certainly wouldn't make sense to write numbers with 17 decimal places. But in this case, if you want to be sure that no information is lost about the base 2 representation, then in this case, actually, you have to write 17 decimal places. Yeah, so we have seen that after each floating point operation, there is some rounding. So this rounding in many cases, it doesn't cause any problems, but in some cases it can cause problems. So especially we will see now, problems arise if you subtract two numbers which are of a similar magnitude. So that's shown on page 38, right? I have there number X, which is 0.12345678. And then a number Y, which is actually more or less identical, only the third decimal place from the end is kind of different, okay? So you see there, yeah, those are two numbers, very similar in magnitude. And if I subtract them, then of course, if I calculate X minus Y, right, I get 0.1 times exponent minus 5. Okay, so that's, of course, then again stored as a double precision floating point number, which in this case, I mean, if I would assume here that we have now floating point numbers with 8 decimal places, then we would again have a relative accuracy of the order of 10 to the minus 9. Yeah, but that's certainly not true. I mean, let's assume if we would have exact arithmetic, for instance, it could be that the exact number X is kind of the one that's shown at the bottom, right? It's again 0.12345678, but then there are 4 zeros and then there's a 9, okay? And well, for the number Y, that's exactly the same as at the top. And then you see now if you subtract those two numbers, then you will get 9 times exponent minus 5. So that means that's this result can be represented, right, in with those 8 decimal places in principle, and well, that would be the exact result, and what we have obtained previously is essentially a wrong result. But I mean, there's nothing you can do about it, because I mean, in floating point arithmetic, right, I mean, you do a rounding after each operation. So if in some operation, right, you get this X, which is 0.12345678, and then 0009, right, this 0009 just will be chopped off because of the rounding. And therefore, if you then calculate later on a difference, I mean, this information about those additional decimal places is completely lost, and you necessarily, you cannot get the correct result. Yeah, so perhaps in this example that I have shown you here, well, you of course you lose certainly accuracy, but it's perhaps not so dramatic. But actually, under certain circumstances, kind of this loss of accuracy can become a real problem, and it's then called catastrophic cancellation. And actually it occurs, for instance, in things like if you calculate the zeros of quadratic equations. In this context, for instance, you can frequently find expressions which are similar kind of to this equation 10, right? You see here, I take the square root of 1.d0, so the double precision floating point number 1, minus x, and then again I subtract minus 1. Okay, so I think everybody understands now what's happening. I mean, if this x differs by less than the machine epsilon, so that this means this ulp of 1, right, then 1 minus x will just be 1. You cannot resolve that anymore. So there's a problem for very small x, right? Then the square root of 1 minus x is square root of 1. Square root of 1 is 1, and 1 minus 1 is 0. So here you get 0. And that's not really true. I mean, if you calculate it exactly, you will get a result which is about 10 to the minus 20. So it's a small number, but it's not really zero. So what can you do in a case like that? I mean, in exact arithmetic, of course, if you do certain transformations on an expression, right, then if you, for instance, if you multiply a numerator and denominator by a certain number, of course, the result will be the same. That's actually not true in floating point arithmetic. So let's do now a transformation which will kind of allow us to calculate with very high precision this kind of expression of equation 10. So that's shown here now in equation 11. So what we do is we just write it as a fraction, and we multiply numerator and denominator by this square root of 1 minus x plus 1, okay? And then we just multiply out the numerator, and then you see I get minus x divided by square root of 1 minus x plus 1, okay? Yeah, now what's happening again? If x is very, very small, if it's less than this, much less than the machine precision, then of course in the denominator, I have a square root of 1, that's just 1, then I have 1 plus 1, that's 2, and then I have minus x half. Okay, but we see that's now actually that's not 0. So actually there I get now more or less with all important decimal places, I get the correct result. So that's a typical example. As an experienced programmer, you should recognize if there are expressions that are can cause problems like this equation 10, and then you should try to write some special code that will then allow to calculate the exact value for such an expression without any catastrophic cancellation. Yeah, on page 40, now there are some exercises that also illustrate to you the difference between exact arithmetic and floating point arithmetic. So you see you have there expressions which are all satisfied, of course, in exact arithmetic, like x plus y in parentheses minus x, of course, that has to be y. Right, if you divide by y, then you can take the inverse, again it should be y, and so on. I mean, there are four equations, all of which are exactly satisfied, of course, in exact arithmetic. But the question is now, are they satisfied in floating point arithmetic? I mean, you can imagine if I ask such an exercise, certainly not all of them will be satisfied in floating point arithmetic. And you should kind of explain that in two different ways. I mean, first, you can actually use this toy floating point system to really follow what's happening, why you possibly get a wrong result. And then, of course, you can also implement it on a computer. That's actually a little bit tricky, and for the following reason. I mean, the compiler typically kind of assumes that a programmer is stupid. So if you write x plus y in parentheses minus x, then as a computer will say, well, that's a simple mathematical rule. X plus y minus x is just y. So I don't do any calculation. I will just replace this expression by something simpler. And then, of course, you have y equals y. And yeah, certainly you could not see such an effect if it exists, right? So for that reason, I mean, if you search for such cases, you have to do two things. First of all, you have to switch off any optimization, right? An optimization will just do what I said. It will say, well, I know x plus y minus x, that's just y, so I don't have to do those stupid calculations. I just know the result is y. And okay, so you have to switch that off. And there on most compilers, you have to use this optimization level 0. So you have to use a flag, something like minus or 0. Then also, it's very important that whenever you have an intermediate result, like, I mean, if you have this x plus y, you have to store the result in a double precision number such that you can be sure that the rounding will be done. Okay, if you do those two things, then actually you should get the same results as in this floating point system. Of course, you will not, it depends, of course, there are, of course, always certain floating point numbers where those relations are also fulfilled exactly, but then I mean you can find certain floating point numbers where that's not the case. Yeah, at the end, let's still look at mixed arithmetic with integers on floating point numbers. That's also, that's always can be a little bit tricky. And so what's happening? I mean, I just wrote down there a few expressions for 1/5, which in principle should be the same, but actually, yes, as we already know, they are not. So what happens if I write x equals 1 divided by 5.0? Okay, now, yeah. Or if I write x equals 1.0 divided by 5, right? Then in both cases, we have as an input to this division, we have an integer and a floating point number. And then actually the compiler is assuming that the result will be of a floating point type. So that's fine. Of course, it's always safer really to use as an input two floating point numbers, which means that you should write x equals 1.0 divided by 5.0. Okay, that's certainly the best thing to do. Then, of course, there's another possibility. Of course, there are functions that transform integers to floating point numbers. For instance, this float operation. And therefore, you can also, for instance, write x4 equals 1 divided by float 5. Then again, well, you have one input, which is a floating point number, another one, which is an integer. And then again, the compiler assumes that the output is a floating point number and everything is fine. Of course, in this case, also probably the safest, the best thing is really also to write x6 equals float of 1 divided by float of 5. In this case, it's absolutely clear now that, right, you have you have initially two integers, which are both transformed or converted to floating point numbers, and then you have an operation just in floating point numbers, and the result will be the correct floating point number. Okay.